Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to PWT Talks NXT for NXT Heatwave here on August 16th, 2022. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out for what I thought about Heatwave. Overall, I thought it was actually pretty good. A little bit of a spoiler there, but here we are. Here we go. And with me tonight to talk about Heatwave is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, I'll say more than hey today. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I have my live report up for Heatwave at pwtorch.com and on the VIP side, so you can check that out there in case you may have missed the show or missed some parts. And you can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
All right, so we don't have Kelly here tonight. Kelly hopefully will be back next week. That's why you hear my voice and not his. So let's just dive into it, shall we? We'll kind of start with the main event, and we'll hit the phone lines, hit the mailbag, work backwards. You guys, you know, you probably know the drill. So we had a main event of Bron Breakker versus JD McDonagh for the NXT Championship. We did see Bron Breakker retain after it was a little bit of a strange finish. JD McDonagh essentially got knocked down, got mouth busted open, stood up behind Breakker like, oh, come on, hit me. I can take more than that. Took a spear and took a, I think it was a suplex. Took a spear, then a suplex.
It was a
military plus slam. Okay. Thank you. I was like, I know it wasn't a suplex, but I'm going to go with it. And that was that for JD McDonagh. Bron Breakker with the win there. And shortly after he did get the win, we heard NXT UK champion Tyler Bate's music hit. Tyler Bate continuing this invasion from the NXT UK roster. That's going to be kind of a thread we talk about a few times throughout the course of the night. But Tyler Bate made his way down to the ring and held his championship up over his head as Bron Breakker did the same, kind of signaling like, you know, they're going to be doing some sort of a who's the better champion type of a match. Before I give my thoughts on this, let's throw to you, Bruce, and see what you thought about the main event and the after match angle.
So I think it makes more sense when you remember that they've been hinting that JD McDonagh is a sadomasochist. So knowing he wasn't going to win, what's the next best thing for a masochist? It's to take pain. So for him getting up and taking the spear like that, it's just a reinforcement of the character that he is. That not only does he like to inflict pain, he likes to receive pain on his end. He gets pleasure out of that.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, early in my match report, I noted that. Let's see, I said Breakker slapped him, but McDonagh smiled, and I said in parentheses, remember, they've hinted he's a sadomasochist, and that played into the finish with what happened there. He took three spears in the military press slam. So, I thought the match, as expected, was good. It was one of Breakker's better title matches in his second reign here. I don't think there's any doubt about that, especially coming off the Joe Gacy feud. This was a breath of fresh air in terms of the quality of the match. And say what you want about the build, at least the build had more believability to it than the whole kidnapping Rick Steiner angle. So I think I was on with Greg on Sunday, and I said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see McDonagh go over here just because I said, why would you debut him so strongly if you're not going to put the belt on him? Even though, you know, I don't think that's going to happen, I wouldn't be surprised because, again, I think with McDonagh taking the loss like he did, I don't know if he can come back at this level anytime soon. So that was the only reason I thought he might go over here. But having Breakker go over makes sense with what they did afterward in debuting Tyler Bate, or re-debut, I guess, because he's been on NXT before as part of Mustache Mountain, but this was back in the Black and Gold era, not in the 2.0 era. So I had seen a report earlier in the day that someone sent about Bate probably being introduced to NXT soon, but it didn't say anything about tonight. So when his music hit, I wasn't as shocked as I might have been in the past. I did note in my report, though, that what does it say about NXT's depth that for two straight championship feuds now, Bron Breakker is facing people that they have to bring over from the UK, from NXT UK, and not anyone that's in NXT proper. So there's just something to think about there. I think the psychology of this match was done really well except for one thing. And this one thing really stood out to me. From the beginning, it was about Breakker's right shoulder. And throughout the match, McDonough was working the left shoulder. Even the spot towards the end when Breakker went for the spear and missed and hit the ring post, he hit with his right shoulder, but McDonough went to the crossface on the left shoulder. So there was just a little bit of miscommunication there. Or, you know, McDonough maybe is just so trained to work the left that he just instinctively worked the left instead of working the right, because we rarely see the right being worked in professional wrestling. That stood out, but overall, I think Sadomasochist McDonough has been established. What they do from here, I think if it was still Vince, they would make it more of a he's trying to look for the biggest spot thing like Shane McMahon. But I think with Triple H, they might try. I don't know how far this character can go. I guess I don't know how far I can come back to this level, but at least he's established. So overall, great match, great outcome. Tyler Bate versus Breakker should be fun, especially with Bate's strength and the size differential. So aside from Bate looking like an extra from A Knight's Tale, I think this was a pretty good way to end Heatwave.
I was thinking more of like a deflated Brock Lesnar, but that was just me. I'll be honest, if it didn't say Tyler Bate on the screen, I wouldn't have recognized him at first, because I haven't been keeping up with the UK products, so it's like I still think of him as Mustache Mountain Tyler Bate, and it threw me off for a second. But I agree. I think that's going to be a phenomenal match once we actually get to it. I'm always a fan of Tyler Bate in the ring, Bron Breakker, his size and his power, it should be an interesting match. As far as this match went, I agree with mostly everything you said. I think it was a pretty decent match. It was well told. I did also kind of notice the shoulder stuff, because I thought it was the right shoulder, and then I saw him working the left, and honestly, I just chalked it up to my brain being a little bit, not with it anymore. That kind of makes sense. Let's see. The one thing that I did want to bring up is for as good as the match was, I feel like, and we talked a little bit about this last week, I just feel like this whole angle it did not feel like the most important thing on NXT, or even the second or third most important thing in NXT. There were so many other things going on that just kind of, I don't know, at least to me, felt more important. This feud it obviously got time, but it didn't get a lot of time in comparison to some of the other angles on the card tonight. Time coming into tonight, not necessarily on this particular show, but, build anyway, TV time was a little bit lacking for the NXT championship. If at least that was my perception of it anyway. And the crowd response kind of fed into that for me. I feel like out of just about every babyface on the roster tonight, Bron Breakker got like the most like lukewarm reaction. Like he got a reaction, but it wasn't like NXT champion babyface level reaction that like you kind of expect. And I feel like his last few big matches like that, the reaction's kind of been waning a little bit. But also too, the crowd just felt like they were sitting on their hands throughout a lot of this match. There were a few people up and cheering and stuff. It definitely was, but looking around the crowd, there's just a lot of people on their cell phones, a lot of people just not even looking at the ring and kind of talking amongst themselves. So I don't know. I felt like the crowd engagement wasn't necessarily there. And I'm not sure if it might be because of that build, because I was a little bit disengaged from the match because of the build. I didn't necessarily latch onto it as much as I think I should have or could have. But it's still a fun match. Definitely explains the finish there, Bruce, with the masochist thing. I guess just because like in my head, it's like, well, if you're in a match to win a title, if you're standing behind the dude, why then just be like, come on, give me more. Like, stand behind him, hit him, attack him, and try to win the title. I don't know.
But well, I think he realized he wasn't going to win.
Yeah, I mean,
The thing is to take the pain.
Yeah, all right. I mean, it kind of makes sense from the masochist standpoint, I guess, but I don't know. It wouldn't have been my decision.
Sometimes if you have predilections, you go for those predilections at the expense of your best interests. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That explains why I didn't get divorced sooner. So I think with all of that, there was something else I wanted to bring up, I think, but can't think of what it was. So with that, let's go to the phone lines, let you guys talk about the show, about Heat Wave. So we'll go to area code 814. If you just heard the word unmuted, you're now live. What'd you think of the show?
It was a pretty newsworthy show, a lot of surprises, which for the like.
All right. Ryan, this is Ryan from Carmel. I don't know if you're calling from a different number tonight. I just did not seem to recognize the number. So Ryan, what did you think of the show what's your first point for us tonight?
My first question is on looks like they might try to unify the NXT and the UK titles. So when do you think that might occur, and do you think all the titles will get lumped in together, just the world titles, or what do you think's going on there?
You know, that is a good question. Like, I have been reading some, few reports and things like that, saying that, you know, UK talent was going to be showing up in the US. You know, Bruce also kind of talked a little bit about that, in our opening segment here tonight. I don't know if they're going necessarily for unification, or if this is really just to try and get some more eyeballs in the UK product. I can't imagine that there's a whole hell of a lot of people watching UK product. I don't know what those numbers are. I don't even know if they release those numbers.
It does well in the UK.
I'm sure it does do well in the UK, but I don't know. I mean, in terms of, like, do they have enough eyeballs on that product to, like, justify continuing to produce that product?
I think they have enough eyeballs in the market where it matters.
If that is the case, then, like, yeah, continue NXT UK, have a little bit of an invasions type storyline over here, just to kind of, you know, mix things up, get some exposure in front of some more eyeballs on the main NXT product. But still keep the two brands separate. I definitely don't mind something like that. Just a little bit of, like, inter-brand rivalry is kind of cool, as long as you don't do it all the time. Like Survivor Series, the one time of the year when I'm not even going to go there. That's kind of how I feel about it. I don't think it's going to be, NXT UK shutting down and then the merging the titles together. Although I can understand why he feels that way, because with the exception of Mako Satomura, the NXT UK women's champion, we've seen, and I guess the Heritage Cup, and I can't remember off the top of my head who holds that. But we haven't seen, we've seen the tag team titles. We've seen the male NXT UK champion championship show up here in the US. So kind of, I can understand why, makes you think, like, oh, what's going on here? But as far as I'm aware, anyway, it's kind of like, just kind of get some more eyes on the product and, kind of just have this interbrand rivalry. But I don't think it's going to lead to any merge of any sort. Bruce?
I think Vic Joseph, as a show on off the air, hinted at what the plans are for this, and it's not unification. I don't think that was the plan to begin with any of these things, because as you've seen, Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen have been doing their own thing. They haven't been involved in the Creeds at all, and they haven't even made any sort of comment about wanting to have the NXT Tag Team Championships with their NXT UK Tag Team Championships. But Vic Joseph said, as the show is going off the air, our world's going to collide again. So I think what's going to happen is we're going to have another Worlds Collide event, which would happen under Triple H a lot, when they would have, 205 versus NXT versus NXT UK kind of thing. And so I think what's going to happen here is a champion versus champion match, or champion versus champion match collide, presumably before whatever the next big, because they usually happened, Worlds Collide usually happened around the big four. And the next big of the big four, Survivor Series, that's not until November, if they want to hold out that long. If not, it might just be one of those, as Kelly calls them, PLE Light episodes of NXT, like tonight, instead of, you know, the next one might be called NXT Worlds Collide. And so I think that's the plan, and that's what they're going with it, which presumably leads to Breakker going back, going over, and having a show of respect for UK, and using that as a means to try and get more people to watch UK stateside, even though in UK it does very, very well from what I understand.
I don't know how I didn't pick up on that. I even said Worlds Collide, and it did not even cross my brain. Instead, I started singing Power Man 5000. Yeah, so that totally makes sense. That absolutely totally makes sense. It wouldn't surprise me if they hung out till Survivor Series. It'd be a bit of a build, but I mean, hey, why not? You know, Survivor Series is usually November.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be a little bit of a build, but you know, 3 months or so. But they could certainly do it, and it makes sense because, you know, Survivor Series is the one time of the year when Raw and SmackDown go head to head. So why not have two other brands go head to head? Certainly makes sense. Ryan, follow up or your next talking point?
My next talking point is on this group, Gallus. That's with the UK group. Who do you think has the most potential to be the biggest star in that group?
Oof. I'm not as super, super, super familiar with Gallus. So I'm going to defer to you, Bruce. What do you think?
The person that has the biggest potential to be a star out of that group is the leader of the group, Joe Coffey. There's a reason why Mark Coffey and Wolfgang are the tag team, why he's the single star, why he was the one competing for NXT UK championships. And I think at one point he did win the NXT UK championship. So he's the one that has the biggest chance. Not just because he's the leader, but he has the most charisma and best promo ability of the three. So I think when it comes to picking one of the three to be someone that NXT fans in the U.S. who don't watch UK or don't know about UK remember, it would be him more so than Wolfgang, even though Wolfgang, you know, might come off the top rope with a moonsault or something. They're going to remember Joe Coffey because, you know, that running, diving headbutt he does, almost like Ilya Dragunov, that is something that during a match, when he has someone coming off the ropes, is very vicious. And he has more of a Sheamus-like style where he's very snug, more snug. So he'll leave more of an impression on people than his brother or Wolfgang. So if you're going to have to put money on it, I would put money on Joe Coffey, but I would never bet on wrestling.
Yeah, probably not. Probably a wise move. Never bet on wrestling. Out of everybody in the group, I mean, Joe Coffey is certainly the one that I've heard the most about and, you know, seems to have made the most waves in the business overall. So certainly makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Ryan, follow on any follow-up there or anything else for us?
I'll go with another topic. It's on Cora Jade and Mandy Rose. But the way they won their matches, the way they won those matches was pretty questionable. Has that ever led to a disqualification, say, like giving a DDT on some sort of foreign object or taking off a brace off your opponent and using it as a weapon? Because I would think that would lead to a disqualification, but the referee acted like that was perfectly fine.
I have explanations for both.
Okay, take it away then. I had my own thing, but feel free. Go ahead.
With the Cora Jade Roxanne Perez thing, while Perez introduced it, the kendo stick happened to be placed there by Perez, and Jade happened to just hit the DDT. It was in the mat. It wasn't anything that Jade did. She happened to just hit the DDT where the kendo stick was. So in the ref's eyes or WWE's eyes, that's not a DQ because she didn't actually use the weapon. I mean, she's not the one who put it there. Even though Jade was the one who introduced it, Perez is the one who placed it there, and Jade just happened to take advantage of it there. When it comes to Rose and Stark, if they were going to call a DQ on her for that, then they would have to call a DQ on Stark for using her knee in anything. So, and we've seen this with wrestlers before. Like Steve Austin had knee braces on both knees. Wrestlers have had their knee braces on, and they've used them behind the ref's back as actual swinging weapons, but when it's strapped to them, it becomes a piece of equipment like the wrestling boots. And so in that regard, you can't disqualify them for using a piece of equipment that's strapped to them, even if it happened to come from their opponent.
So you and I were both on the same page in the last one with Mandy Rose and the knee brace there. The first one, I'm with you. I'm with you like 95%, but isn't the referee's job to get the debris out of the ring if there's debris or things that shouldn't be in the ring?
Happened too quickly. It happened right. It went. She dropped it and she turned and got drilled and then went to the DDT. And the ref has to keep an eye on both the action and trying to do everything. So I'm just trying to be devil's advocate here.
Oh no, believe me, I know. That's exactly what I was doing. But yeah, I mean, both of those can at least be, you know, explained. I mean, I wish there was a little bit more consistency with things like that, but you know, wrestling. But yeah, definitely things that can kind of easily be explained. Although they, you know, definitely kind of can take you out of the moment when you start to think about it like that. Ryan, any follow-up or anything else?
I did have a follow-up on the Mandy Rose. I thought the reason why wrestlers were allowed to use that as a weapon was because it's medically cleared, and depending on when had medical clearance to use that piece of equipment would be my argument on that.
Now you're just applying too much logic to professional wrestling here, Ryan.
That's, yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, definitely hear what you're saying, but at the same time, I think, professional wrestling.
All right. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, Ryan. Thank you as always. Definitely appreciate it. All right. So if you guys do want to join the show like Ryan did here tonight, you can call us at 515-605-9345. If you are currently listening, you can press 1 to let me know you want to talk. Ryan was the only one to do so tonight, but we do have some people listening. So if you do want to talk, hit 1 and that'll put a big hand next to your phone number and lets me know you guys want to be on the show. If you are listening to the recording, you can call 515-605-9345. Approximately 10 to 20 minutes after NXT goes off the air, we'll go live after, you know, we do what we got to do in between NXT and this show, in our real lives anyway. And then we'll go live and we'll start talking with you guys and do the show and all that good fun stuff. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And ask those questions, get your comments in if you want to be part of the show as well. And that's exactly what Brian Alston did here tonight. Brian Alston says, hello, friends. Happy heat wave day. You know, it's not really much of a heat wave. I think it's literally 65 degrees outside my window right now. Ryan's not saying that. Brian's
not outside my window. Saying,
yeah, but you're in Hawaii. You don't count.
Brian's in Phoenix.
Well, yeah, I know. But you said outside your window.
Well, I mean, his window's probably still like in the 80s or 90s right now, too.
Yeah, probably. You guys in the nice weather places and, anyway. Brian also says, hello, friends. Happy heat wave day. My big match picks before the show. He did send this at 8:30, so it was just after NXT heat wave kicked off. He says that he predicted Bron Breakker was going to retain. Mandy Rose beats Zoe Stark. And Santos pins Tony D'Angelo. So he was 2 out of 3 there. 2 out of 3. He did predict everything except for Tony D'Angelo did wind up going over. He says, conventional wisdom states that Mandy will lose to Zoe, so Toxic Attraction go to Raw or SmackDown as a group. I think they'll want to sell Zoe Stark. Oh, that's weird. Okay, he says he thinks he wants them to tell the Zoe Stark Chase story a little bit longer. But at the same time, he also said that in the beginning that Mandy Rose would beat Zoe Stark. So I'm a little confused, but that's what the email says. He also says, conventional wisdom also states that Santos will lose so he can go to Raw or SmackDown. However, the language of the stipulation is Santos must leave NXT, but not necessarily all of Legado del Fantasma leave NXT. Remember how Tony said Electra Lopez has been a top earner. I think LDF should go up as a group. Thanks for reading my email, and don't forget to listen to the VIP exclusive Torch podcast, NXT 8 years back, where Kelly Wells and Tom Stout, Tom, I haven't talked to you in so long, I don't even remember your name. Kelly Wells and Tom Stope discuss the NXT champion Charlotte versus Becky Lynch. We also have 2 Enzo Amore and Big Cass segments. Whoopee. They talk about They also talk, and movie trivia, and this week is about the director of 12 Rounds. Thanks, Brian Alston. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about Santos Escobar and Tony D'Angelo here. So actually, we'll just kind of go right into that. They had a street fight here tonight. Santos Escobar, Tony D'Angelo. If Tony D'Angelo won, then Santos Escobar leaves NXT. If Santos Escobar wins, Legado del Fantasma is free from the grips of the D'Angelo family, and they free to go off, do their own thing, and, you know, do some more street gang crimes, because essentially that's what this whole feud was, guys. It was just two street gangs kind of waging war against one another. I actually really liked this match. One of the things that I really liked was, even before this match, there was a vignette that basically outlined the last 4 months of this feud. And man, there were a lot of things that I kind of either forgotten about, or just kind of happened so long ago, it's been going on for 4 months, that, you know, kind of like faded into my memory. But kind of going through each and everything and all of the points leading up to this, like the meeting on, you know, that little the little yacht, or, you know, whatever it was, the boat.
A little yacht.
The little yacht, you know. All of that stuff, like, it was just really cool to see. It was really well produced, really well put together. I think this feud has been one of my favorite things in NXT consistently, you know, for a while now. I mean, like I said, it's been going on for about 4 months. The match itself, I did enjoy. However, now, I think, like I said, you know, there were two street gangs here. This is essentially what it was, two street gangs. Putting them in a street fight was, you know, the right choice, because it feels like the right stipulation. Street gang, street fight, let's do it. Now, yes, I know that the pinfall needs to take place in the ring for a street fight, but I expected them to do a little bit more fighting around the building and out in, you know, the street than they did here. This essentially just kind of felt like a, you know, a standard, like, no DQ type match, not necessarily like a street fight. You know, obviously there was some interference from, you know, Legado, and as well as from, Stacks rather.
Stacks.
Two Dimes is no more. Stacks. So there's some interference
with
there.
The fishes. Who knows if he's alive or dead?
Well, that's true.
Like Kanye West in South Park.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of expected them to, you know, do some more street fighting. You know, like I said, whether it was backstage or out in the parking lot, maybe through the streets or something. I don't know. I felt like this was going to be, I don't want to say a cinematic match, because I don't think it was going to be a cinematic match, but I felt like it was going to be a little bit more cinematic than it was, based on the build, all of the vignettes and everything like that. I was a little bit disappointed that it just kind of stayed in the ring as much as it did. And I'm not even talking about outside the ring. There was still some, you know, stuff outside the ring, but the amount of time for a street fight that they were actually between the ropes was kind of surprising to me. So that took away from this a little bit for me. Otherwise, I do have to admit, I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. You know, for what it was anyway, what was presented, I did enjoy. And, you know, Santos Escobar did lose. Looks like he's probably going to wind up going to the main roster. If I had to guess, it's going to be without Legado del Fantasma, and they're probably going to be stuck with the family for the time being. This will be, if he gets called up and he's up there sooner rather than later, this will be the first call-up since Triple H took over. So it's going to be interesting to see how he debuts and how he fares compared to some of the other people that have been called up, you know, before him.
It depends how you want to count Nikita Lyons as always start.
Well, yeah, that's true, but
they haven't wrestled yet, but they've been announced and shown.
That's true. So I guess it's not necessarily the first, but at the same time, I feel like they are just in there to fill a spot. I don't feel like they're in there to actually go up.
I think tonight's outcome actually may indicate that that Stark and Lyons are actually going to be moving to Raw or SmackDown sooner rather than later, and they might go as a team, because there's something about how everything went down in that women's championship match tonight, that leads me to believe that those two specifically are going to be Triple H projects on Raw or SmackDown. And they're going to be he's going to have a lot of focus on them, not in terms of maybe the production or TV time necessarily, but in terms of how he helps them develop. I just have a feeling that that's where we're headed, especially with them. They're not just being promoted on Raw and SmackDown, but they keep bringing up on NXT how those two are in the Women's Tag Team Championship tournament. And it wouldn't surprise me if they pull a Cinderella run and they make the finals or the semifinals to lose. So I just think that at this point, those two are going to be off of NXT sooner than we would like.
You know, as you were talking, I started thinking about it, and it's like Nikita Lyons doesn't have really any sort of feud or anything going on right now either. So,
well, it's a toxic attraction, but that's because Zoe Stark was involved in toxic attraction. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, she's been very much an afterthought for the last, handful of weeks. So, definitely, I guess definitely could lay some credence to that there. So, makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Where did I put your email, Brian?
About Santos and LDS.
I think I closed the tab. I did close the tab. All right. Santos and LDF. Let's see. So it was really more like you just kind of making some comments about them rather than a question. What did you think of the match between Santos Escobar and Tony D'Angelo, as well as the outcome?
So before the match, as you were saying, that recap of the feud was done really, really well. And then that intro for Santos Escobar, the more the match went out, and especially after the match ending, I looked at that as them doing a test run of his debut entrance for Raw or SmackDown. And that's one of those entrants, I think, where you debut at a premier live event, the PLE, as a mystery opponent or something, or an open challenge. And that kind of an entrance immediately marks you on Raw or SmackDown as a star, as a potential star, someone to watch for, especially with the kind of inherent charisma he oozes out when he appears, even in a mask, and then taking off the mask. That it was a test run for him to see exactly how it might look if they translate that to a larger, more polished production of Raw or SmackDown, especially a premier live event. So that's, that was one of the best entrances in NXT 2.0. Usually their entrances are just, we're going to do something real quick at the entrance area, like Braun Breaker breaking a Styrofoam X, or tonight Carmelo Hayes bashing, Braun Breaker bashing a crate with J.D. McDonough spray painted on it with a sledgehammer, hint, hint, and Carmelo Hayes dropping in a shirt of Giovanni Vinci into a flaming trash can. That's usually what happens. So this was something they went out of their way to do, and I think there was a very specific reason for that. The match itself was good. I will say, maybe not in WWE's defense, but more, again, devil's advocate, most street fights in WWE kind of have this sort of layout to them. And those that tend to go more, backstage or different places tend to have a backstage brawl or something associated with them. Unless you're Solo Sikoa, then of course King of the Streets, so it's always going to fight in the streets, right? So the different, and I think you're not wrong to have thought that maybe a cinematic match was coming because of how many cinematic vignettes there were for this feud and the build, especially the last one to lead to this final match. So I don't think you're wrong there to try and think that. And so after the match, my biggest question was, all right, what do you do with LDF now? Are they going to be cronies now? Are they going to, be a mutant? Are they going to, just be by themselves? Because those are three people who their acts need to have a leader. And unfortunately, neither of the three are leaders. So, I'm going to be interested to see what happens to those three moving forward.
Mute button is my worst enemy. No, that's my big question coming out of this too, is, what happens to LDF? I feel like they probably stick with Tony D'Angelo. That just seems to make the most sense to me. That's what they've been doing. And even, you know, it was even a few weeks ago, it was right before Santos Escobar came back, we were talking about how, you know, Legado del Fantasma, when they came out with the family, they, you know, they were dressed the same. They, you know, they looked like they wanted to be there. They were, you know, kind of like rah, rah, let's go family, you know? So I kind of have a feeling that might be it. But there is also the possibility that all four of them get the call up, or at least three of them get the call up. And I say three because I don't feel like Carmen Electra. Electra Lopez is quite ready for that call up yet. We'll obviously see what happens as time goes on here. But it looks like Santos Escobar is going to be going up in the near future. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And I like where you're going with the entrance and kind of them testing the entrance. Makes sense. I really would love to see him, like, you know, answer an open challenge or, you know, be a mystery opponent, like you said. Because Santos Escobar is just like a staple down here in NXT now. Like I think it was Wade Barrett, you know, said, might've been Joseph. One of the announcers said, can you imagine NXT without Escobar? And I started thinking about it and I'm like, no, I kind of can't. I can, because it's not like he's on every week, but he's just, you know, he's been one of my favorite consistent acts since he joined NXT. So it's going to definitely be a little bit, it's definitely bittersweet to see him go. But to see him debut, especially under Triple H on the main roster, is going to be pretty cool. It's going to be pretty cool. I hope. Fingers crossed. So we're going to move to another email from Kevin.
Nate, real quick.
Oh, okay, we're not going to move to another email from Kevin.
Just real quick. You were also someone who thought you couldn't imagine NXT without Tommaso Ciampa, and here we are.
It still feels wrong. It still feels wrong. But with any luck, he'll beat Roman Reigns for the Universal title, and then everything will be fine.
There's all the hopes that people had of him holding up both titles at the end of WrestleMania once Triple H took over.
Yep. Like me. God, I hope so. You know what? If he gets a WWE championship or a Universal title run, I'll be happy. He doesn't have to beat Roman Reigns or whatever. That would be even cooler. But, man, I'd love to see him get some championship gold, you know, main event championship gold around his waist. IC title, U.S. title be good, but I want to see him win the big one. That's just me. All right, Kevin Catani. Kevin says, salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well. I'm in the mountains of Denver visiting my brother, but wanted to reach out nonetheless. With Triple H back in the driver's seat, how do you think this will best benefit NXT, and how do you think this could hurt NXT? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8 years back. Office hours are now over. Kevin Catani, PhD. Okay. So we've talked a lot about this over the past, you know, handful of weeks. So one thing that we haven't actually talked about that kind of just came out this week is we've been going back and forth, you know, blaming Bruce Pritchard and Kevin Dunn and all them for all these things that have been going on down in NXT 2.0. And, you know, since the inception of NXT 2.0, and it turns out it's been Shawn Michaels all along. He admitted it over the week and said if it's something good, something bad, it all, you know, comes down to him. So that said, I think if Triple H is back in the helm and he's working with Shawn Michaels again, and there's some sort of that relationship there, I think it's going to help the product. Shawn Michaels isn't a promoter. He even said that he's like, I'm not a promoter. This is my first time being like a promoter, being a booker. So he was kind of flying. I wouldn't say flying by the seat of his pants. He's doing the best he could. I think he might need a little bit of help. And I think Triple H would be, you know, obviously be the guy to do that. Not only the best friends, they've got a great working relationship. So I think it's going to be, you know, be a damn good thing for NXT. In terms of how it could hurt NXT, I think there's a possibility that Triple H winds up trying to make this a third brand again, considering that was like his baby, and it's going to hurt the developmental aspect of NXT, or it could hurt the developmental aspect of NXT. But that's really the only thing I can think of. That's kind of where my brain goes with that question there. So with that, Bruce, what do you think? What is the benefit and what could potentially hurt NXT with Triple H back in charge?
I mean, the benefit most likely will be that there will be coherence between the acts on NXT and when they move to Raw or SmackDown, so that, you know, we don't have someone in the middle of their feuds like Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano debuting as a tag team on Raw or anything like that. I think we're going to be more apt to hear about NXT title runs and NXT feuds on Raw and SmackDown now that Triple H is in charge, because why not channel that history, especially when you're trying to build new stars? Like, one reason that Kevin Owens became so over right away was not only was he NXT champion when he came in, but he had that, he won his match with John Cena. And having that extra bit of credibility as NXT champion only helped to get him more over with the fans. So I think some benefits are going to be like that. I think he won't be as apt to release talent as quickly as Vince McMahon would have. But then again, Nick Khan is still there. So who knows on that side. I do think that the storylines in NXT will be a bit more, not as outlandish, I guess, as they were under Vince and Bruce, and that the shows, as we have seen over the past few weeks, even the past month or so, past couple of months, with Shawn Michaels having some influence, of course, is that there's more of a defined outline or a defined sort of fluidity to the show, whereas prior to the past month or two, the show just felt very haphazard and kind of chaotic. Now it just seems more fluid. And that, I think, is going to be something we continue to see. Negatives is that, like any promoter, Triple H has his favorites, and sometimes that's to the detriment of others. Triple H also has his distinct style of wrestling that he likes to do, and right now, for professional wrestling fans, it may be if they tell the stories right, but it's also asking a lot to sit through, you know, 5 or 6 25, 30-minute matches at a PLE. So we, I think, are, you know, because of how he likes to build those big, large takeover events, looking back at it, the shortest matches tended to be around, you know, 12 to 15 minutes for a women's match, but the other matches were around 20 minutes. So I think it's a lot to ask. And are there any other negatives that I see right now? I think when I was on with Wade a couple weeks ago to discuss Dynamite, I also said that, you know, it's still a bit too early to really get a sense of what his booking strategy is going to look like, because now instead of one show, he has the two main shows, and it's not his little pet project on the side anymore that, you know, isn't really being paid attention to. It's him in charge of the flagship and the second main show, which is now the main show of SmackDown. So I think we need to give it probably till the end of the year until we can get a distinct sense of what, not just the positive and negatives, but what are the distinct changes that are happening to WWE under a Triple H-led creative.
And I think that's pretty fair. Wait until the end of the year. So let's go to another email from JB. JB says, hi guys, JB from Detroit. One, do you think that Triple H might just decide to fold NXT into NXT proper? It seems more and more likely. The top talent from UK is being brought stateside, and the next two NXT UK tapings have been outright canceled. It's also rumored that UK roster members are worried about the state of the brand. Also, do you think that Vic Joseph gave away the name for the NXT Labor Day weekend event when he ended the show by saying we're about to see worlds collide? Yes. Yes, I do.
I think it was meant to be a big time Easter egg or
foreshadowing.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Foreshadowing. Yeah. There we go.
Yep. I'm just an idiot and I didn't pick up on it, but at least both of you guys did, Bruce and JB. And then he says, I personally did not like the end of the women's title match. Why would using a foreign object that you didn't bring into the ring to start the match be allowed to be used as a weapon? And we've kind of already touched on that a little bit with Ryan a little bit ago. He says, as always, love the show and go VIP. So we pretty much touched on everything here, but I didn't read the emails before we started the show tonight, so I felt like I should at least read the email. But do you have anything to follow up on that? I feel like we kind of covered this email already.
Yeah, not on those topics. I'm good.
Cool. All right, JB, thanks for the email, buddy. We'll see you next – well, we won't see it, but we'll probably read your email next week. All right. Let's see. What other matches haven't we talked about yet? We haven't talked about Mandy Rose versus Zoe Stark for the NXT Women's Championship. So let's talk about Mandy Rose versus Zoe Stark for the NXT Women's Championship. We did see Mandy Rose retain after getting the knee brace to the face, as we did talk about that a little bit. I don't have your report up, or do I? I do have your report up. What was the time on that? It was 11 minutes and 24 seconds. So here was the big question coming in. Well, not necessarily coming into this match, but it was they were trying to determine, I think it was a battle royal. They were trying to figure out who the number one contender was going to be. 20 women battle royal, 19 of them named. And then Zoe Stark was, you know, the 20th unnamed contender that, you know, wound up finding herself in that match and wound up winning. And that's how we kind of wound up here tonight. Before that, we'd spent weeks talking about who the hell is going to be the next opponent for Mandy Rose. It didn't seem like there was anybody on the roster that seemed, you know, credible. We were throwing names like Indy Hartwell around, and that didn't really seem like exciting. And it didn't really, you know, we really didn't know who it was going to be. And then Zoe Stark comes back. We're like, oh, okay, it's going to be Zoe Stark. And then, of course, like I said, she won and, you know, wound up coming into this match tonight. Now this begs the question. Now that Zoe Stark has lost here tonight, and, you know, as we were talking about earlier, it seems like there's potential for a call-up for both her and Nikita Lyons to the main roster. Who's next for Mandy Rose? Because I would have said Nikita Lyons, but if Nikita Lyons and Mandy and Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark are potentially going to be called up as a team, well, where do we go? I can't personally think of anybody, with the exception of Alba Fire, that makes any sense. But I don't know if they'd go back to that, because that was her last feud as Kaylee Ray. So, yeah, I'm not sure. This is unless, you know, they bring maybe worlds collide. Mako Satomura. There we go. That's probably what's going to happen. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, that's probably the next feud, but what's the next title feud?
Well, at least that gives them some time to build it up there.
Sure. It's going to be Roxanne Perez, obviously, with her losing tonight. I think, so they could do Cora Jade versus Mandy Rose again, and this time go with the Cora Jade. I'm a different Cora Jade than I was then, which is accurate. But that would be a heel-heel matchup, and we know they don't like doing a heel-heel matchup. You could do the winner of Stratton versus Chu in their Lights Out match, even though Lights Out matches technically are unsanctioned. But then again, you know, if Stratton wins, it's another heel-heel matchup. But I could see that being the double turn, or not the double turn, but the face turn for Tiffany Stratton during the match with Mandy Rose, have it happening there if they do go that way. So right now, the options aren't very not appealing. That's not the word I'm looking for. What's the word? They're not laid out in a very, very logical sense. And I brought up logic earlier with Ryan, but I just don't think, I think you have to do too many, you have to go over too many hurdles to get people to believe in this being the next title match or the next title feud. So with those ones, you have to wait a little bit. Worlds Collide definitely gives them more time. So in the intervening weeks between now and Worlds Collide, they need to do a good job of building up the next contender. They can't go back to having another battle royal, because you're just letting the fans know how little depth you have in your women's division, that you keep coming back to these sorts of matches to determine who your next contender is for a women's champion, whose reign now exceeds 300 days. I think Halloween Havoc was when she won the title. So we are approaching 1 year of Mandy Rose as NXT Women's Champion. And yeah, where do they go from here? That is always the question with the Mandy Rose title run. It's also the question, if it wasn't for Tyler Bate, with Bron Breakker. So there, and I think that the question still remains for Bron Breakker, who is his, what's his next title feud going to be after this? If, because Tyler Bate is obviously going to be for Worlds Collide.
All right. So let's, do we have another email? We don't. We don't have another email. Okay. We talked about, okay, Cora Jade, Roxanne Perez, and Carmelo Hayes, and Giovanna Vinci. I will give you the option. Which one do you want to talk about first?
The opener.
Let's do it. Let's talk about Carmelo Hayes versus Giovanni Vinci for the NXT North American Championship. We saw Carmelo Hayes retain here in a absolutely fantastic opening match. So one of the things that I wrote in the Hits and Misses tonight is that I did not think when Fabian Aichner, the now Giovanni Vinci, when he was Fabian Aichner, part of Imperium, I didn't really think I saw like a singles run in him. I think we even got a question at one point talking about Imperium and what, you know, other than Walter, now Gunther, who would be, you know, a breakout star there. And, I kind of remember like floundering. Neither one of us, I think it was still Kelly and Tom and I back then, kind of floundering, just like, I don't really know. Fabian Aichner did not seem like he was going to be somebody that would break out as a star for me. And I'm really digging what he's doing as Giovanni Vinci. I still think there's some room to be done and some work to be done on his gimmick and kind of giving us a little bit more, some more white mic work and things like that. But it's definitely getting there. It's better than what I, kind of when he started. We're starting to get a little bit more as time goes on out of him for things like that. But his in-ring work is next level. In terms, especially down here in NXT, he's right on the same level as Carmelo Hayes. They made some magic down here tonight. I really, really enjoyed this opening match. It was super fast paced, very explosive. I thought it was a great way to kick off a premium live event light, as Kelly has dubbed it, like Heatwave here tonight with a match like this. So like I said, Carmelo Hayes did retain after Trick Williams kind of interfered on his behalf. And, they took like a double power bomb thing. And Carmelo Hayes wound up he tried to get Carmelo Hayes up for power bomb, but Carmelo Hayes wound up reversing it into like a Hurricane Rana, rolling him up for the win. So I've kind of gushed a little bit about this match. Bruce, what'd you think?
Real quick, apparently the NXT UK Championship Tournament hasn't actually happened yet, and so they pretty much spoiled it with Tyler Bate coming out with the title. Okay. Moving on.
No, you know what? It's so weird because I did not hear about Tyler Bate winning the title, and I actually went to WWE.com, and it still says that it's vacant. Or at least as we started our show, it said that the NXT UK title was vacant. So I was kind of surprised. So, all right, that's weird. Well, way to spoil things, guys.
Moving on to this match. So I wouldn't go – I like both of them, of course. I think, you know, going back to your thing about Breakker, I was saying for a while now that, to me, Breakker has been an afterthought on the show, and the main fulcrum of the show has been Carmelo Hayes. He's the one who's really been the glue of the entire show. And so I love both of these two. I've liked
the A champion, if you will.
Yes. I've liked Aichner since the Cruiserweight Classic. In his debut there, and just the things that he did, especially that, as we saw tonight, that little double springboard moonsault he does. But I'm not going to go as far as to say that I thought it was a fantastic match. There were at least, I'll say it was a good match. Every match tonight was a good match, and even the worst match on the card tonight was at best an average match. So I think it lived up to its PLE-like billing. This has been better than some of the actual PLEs that NXT has put on at under 2.0. So the thing about the match to me where I won't put it as fantastic is there were about three spots that I can remember off the top of my head where it seemed like the chemistry was not there. It seemed a little off. There was some miscommunication and an early rope run, and then there's another one on another rope run, and then, of course, the spot where Hayes is looking like he's going to go for a blockbuster, and then Aichner would catch him into the vertical suplex where Hayes didn't get enough air, and so he wasn't able to be caught, and then Aichner had to land him, and then from there put him into the suplex. So those were some of the spots I saw that didn't make it to me a fantastic match. But it was a good opener. It really highlighted Aichner, and it gave him a bit of an out as to losing because of the interference by Williams towards the end and even during the match. So I think what they did here was try and give Eichner a way of still looking strong while losing the match. It's always one of those things with WWE. They just can't go with clean finishes because they think that the fans think clean finishes mean that you are not, that you're somehow less worthy or anything. But I think the interference more often than not makes the wrestlers look more dumb because of it usually happening to baby faces. But the match was good. Now I wonder if Hayes starts chirping about the NXT championship, the men's championship, and so that after Worlds Collide, he comes out and interrupts Breaker or something during an interview, and they finally go for the champion versus champion match that we've been pining for since pretty much the beginning of 2022.
All right, and finally, Cora Jade versus Roxanne Perez. We did see Cora Jade pick up the victory here against her former best friend, Roxanne Perez. This was interesting match. Obviously, the story of the match here, you have Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade, they won the tag team titles together. Cora Jade turned on Roxanne Perez. They ended up relinquishing the tag team titles, and then, you know, there was a tournament for them and all that. But this was supposed to be Roxanne Perez's, like, you know, her revenge here tonight. She didn't quite wind up getting, or Cora Jade didn't quite wind up getting her comeuppance here tonight, which I think was the right call, especially if you're trying to build like a main event level heel. You don't want them to lose right away. So I think this is a kind of a good call to get Cora Jade a pretty good win here tonight over Roxanne Perez, which also makes me believe that this is far from over. This feud's far from over. Roxanne Perez, you know, just to get the feud, at the end of the feud, the heel generally gets to come up. And so I'm kind of assuming we'll see Roxanne Perez wind up getting some sort of like a, you know, some sort of a, you know, big win over Jade at some point in the near future. And I say near future, you know, the next 6 months or so, some sort of a big win over her, kind of to build her as a credible babyface, if that is where they're trying to go with her. You know, if all of a sudden things pivot and Roxanne Perez is, you know, she's focused with somebody else after this and doesn't look back to Cora Jade for, you know, a couple of years or something like that, then I'm wondering, you know, what the ceiling is for Roxanne Perez if you know, she's you're kind of just going to be toiling around the mid-card for a little bit and then working her way up to the main roster or what. So kind of see where that goes here. This match was okay. It was like, you know, Bruce said a little bit ago, none of the matches here were horrible tonight, or even bad for that matter. This was, I think, on the better side of good, in terms of a Cora Jade Roxanne Perez match. We've seen them wrestle stuff before. They're both still kind of green, and especially, you know, Roxanne Perez coming into the WWE, she's still learning, WWE way of doing things. And Cora Jade, you know, she's still very new to the company, very new to the business as well. So she's obviously still learning the in-ring aspect of things here. So I think it was a decent match. There were certainly some sloppy segments. Cora Jade took, I think it was a drop kick. She took a drop kick to the side of the face or some sort of a kick to the side of the face and fell like in the complete opposite direction of the way that she should have. She actually like took the kick and then fell inwards towards Cora Jade, towards Roxanne Perez rather than falling away from Roxanne Perez. Little things like that, that just really kind of stick out. And if you notice them, you notice them. If you're not looking for them, you probably won't notice. But if you know what to look for, you know, it kind of sticks out and takes you out of the match a little bit. You know, overall was certainly far from a disaster. I did enjoy the match. And I'm kind of curious to see where they go from here. I'm hoping it's a continuation and we wind up seeing Roxanne Perez get a victory over Cora Jade and before they move on to different opponents. But time will tell. Bruce.
The most disastrous thing about tonight were those kicks that Nikita Lyons threw at Toxic Attraction during the World
Cup.
Oh,
you know what? I'm so glad you said that because that was like the one biggest thing I pointed out in the hits and misses. Those kicks were freaking abysmal.
And they missed by so much.
oh my God, it just looked like she was like some 8-year-old kid trying to be a ninja to their mother, you know, like backing them down a hallway or something. Oh, it was so bad. Anyway, that's my 2 cents on that.
So, yeah, the match was fine. I think I'm more interested in talking about sort of where each one goes from here. It's another thing that we were talking about earlier. So I'm less inclined to believe what you were talking about with Perez moving to the mid-card. And I think what's more likely to happen is she, because of her character still being so moldable right now, I think she's going to become one of those wrestlers whose character becomes singularly focused on their chosen foe who they want vengeance upon. And that is Cora Jade. So I wonder if, you know how sometimes you get people in the Royal Rumble who go after their arch nemesis and eliminate each other at the expense of actually winning the match?
Yep.
I think that's kind of what's going to happen. Not in the sense they're going to enter the Rumble and do that, which, I mean, they might in January, that could happen. But I think what's going to happen is she's going to be that person, kind of like Becky Lynch was after she lost to Bianca Belair and going through all that. Just not necessarily, maybe devolving, but sort of making her character one that is just so focused on Cora Jade. She basically fails to notice the things around her. She fails to see the forest for the trees, basically, right? So I think that's what's going to happen. Now, Cora Jade, again, if they want to go heel-heel with the Mandy Rose matchup because they have the backstory of the goody-two-shoes Cora Jade now being the I wear all black because I'm a heel Cora Jade, I mean, they have that there. But I also wonder if now her next feud is Zoe Stark, if Zoe Stark stays on NXT for a bit, maybe as a send-off, because and putting Jade over, you know, next week or something like that. It could be easily set up by Stark being in the locker room with Lions and they're lamenting. Maybe they lose on Friday and they're lamenting their whole week, you know, and Jade walks in and makes fun of them and then goes Stark into a match and then Stark puts over Jade to be sent off to Raw or SmackDown. I think that could happen. And if not, then I think if Wendy Chu wins, she might. Well, okay. I said earlier they could do the turn with Tiffany Stratton against Mandy Rose by turning Stratton face. They could also turn Stratton face in this feud with Wendy Chu, because Wendy Chu is the one who's been doing all the felonious stuff, and Stratton's been doing nothing but being a rational human being in reaction to what Wendy Chu has done to her. But that could be another thing too. And again, it just goes back to the lack of depth. Maybe Alba Fyre is Cora Jade's next hope, but Alba Fyre leans a bit heel. She just is a badass. So it just, yeah, I think the both the men's and women's singles division right now are showing the lack of depth they have at the top in terms of the title picture. There's a lot of people towards the bottom and the middle of the cards, but not enough at the top to maintain championship runs and champion feuds.
All right. So those are the matches that we had tonight. So we got a few other things to talk about here. Let's talk about Diamond Mine. So we had Julius Creed. There was essentially looked like a Zoom video earlier in the night that was posted on the internet at some point over the past week, where Julius Creed said that he had an announcement and he was going to point out the person that's trying to dismantle Diamond Mine, however he worded it, however he said it, but essentially that's what he meant, just dismantle Diamond Mine. So Diamond Mine winded up coming out to the ring. Everybody but Ivy Nile was not there, was she?
Nope. I made a note by, like, where the hell is Ivy Nile?
Yeah, that literally just occurred to me that Ivy Nile was not there. But everybody else in Diamond Mine was out there. Julius Creed wound up, you know, going to call this person out and called Roderick Strong and said it was Roderick Strong that was actually the one trying to dismantle Diamond Mine, which, you know, come on. If you listen to our show, we could have told you that like weeks ago. Julius, come on. He ended up replaying some footage from 3 weeks ago, six-man tag against the family, where it very clearly looked like Roderick Strong took a hand signal from Tony D'Angelo, and then they both kind of made it look like a knee to the face from Roddy to Julius was an accident when Tony ducked out of the way. But it kind of looked like they might have been in cahoots. Roddy obviously denied that over and over again, and In the middle of denying that, well, Gallus attacked and took out everybody. When it looked like they might align with Roddy, they then took out Roddy too. So we kind of didn't quite get a bit of any sort of closure or anything like that on this this angle here with Roderick Strong, but it kind of leaves some questions here. You know, what's going on? Are we going to see Roddy maybe join the family or have some affiliation with Tony D'Angelo and the family? With Gallus, like we saw Gallus later in the night challenge for the UK title. So you can talk about that too if you want. Challenged Briggs and Jensen for the UK titles, which you're going to see next week. But in terms of like taking out Diamond Mind, they didn't really come back and address that. I don't necessarily know if I don't think Roderick Strong is going to be affiliated with Gallium. Gallium. Gallium's a metal. Gallium's a metal that eats aluminum. Gallus is a tag team that beats people.
A stable.
I know. I guess I said tag team. But a stable that beats people. Instead of eats metal, they beat people. So I don't think Roddy's going to be like, joining forces with Gallus or anything like that. But, potentially the family, especially if Legado gets called up, it's just Tony D'Angelo and Stack. So they need somebody else. Why not Roddy? Your thoughts on that match as well as the Gallus stuff and them challenging Briggs and Jensen.
So as I was writing the report, I didn't see the hand signals being clearly defined, and I wrote that I think Julius is spending too much time on YouTube, eh? So just
I did go back, and because I didn't notice it at first either, but I did go back, and you can very clearly see Tony D'Angelo tapping the ring, getting his attention, getting Roddy's attention, and then they go in for the spot where he gives the knee and accidentally hits Julius. But yeah, it was like going back and watching, it was like very clear.
I mean, if they had that much forethought into this angle, then good for them for doing that. For me, Julius being all YouTube conspiracy theory to me was kind of funny. But to me, the thing that stood out the most is, so we thought that when Apollo Crews had his vision of Diamond Mine laid out in the ring in green light, that was him having a vision of him laying them out. But maybe it was that he saw a vision predicting the arrival of Gallus because they came in the green light and they laid out Diamond Mine in the middle of the ring, all four of them in the center.
I didn't even think about that. Good thinking.
Again, He's been shown with the Creed brothers watching film, and he almost made a challenge to Bron Breakker tonight about the NXT Women's Championship. But beyond that, my biggest question then was, where the hell did Apollo Crews get these predictive powers from? We need a promo to let us know how he knew this was going to happen. Otherwise, it's like watching X-Men without Charles Xavier there to tell you exactly what's going on. I need to know exactly how. Was it so? Did a spider bite you? Did you hit some radiation? What happened, Apollo? And why is it always green light with you? Like, what is it? What is it, Apollo? How did you do this? Better than Captain Hindsight, but just how did you do this? I need to know.
Let's see. What else do we have going on tonight? We had Von Wagner and Mr. Stone cut a promo in Solo Sikoa. We saw Dexter Lumis send a love letter to Indy Hartwell, and then Blair Davenport from NXT UK showed up and ripped it in half. When I saw that that love letter, the little part
warmed
of my heart. Yeah, it warmed right up right there. At least he's still looking out for Indy.
Even when he's getting thrown out for trespassing in arenas.
Yep, even though he's pretending to be Enzo. And then we had the Wendy Chu vignette. We talked a little bit about that earlier. And we also had the vignette for Quincy Elliott, the super diva, which I think I like the character in theory, but so far it looks low rent. That was my two cents.
You need to have higher hopes. This is going to be a money gimmick.
No. I think it's going to be a money gimmick. Don't get me wrong, but the presentation of it tonight looked low rent. I want them to give it some more pizzazz. I'm 100% on board with it, and I think once he actually gets out in front of a crowd, it's gonna pop, and it's gonna be legit. But something about the presentation tonight made it feel it felt like it had an independent promotion feel to it. It wasn't like an NXT production.
I understand, but maybe this will help. So apparently, he appeared on Level Up on a moped and called himself the Uncle Taker. Now that is pretty funny.
Completely sold. I almost just dropped an F-bomb. I'm completely sold on that. I mean, we're going to pause. We're going to rewind about 25 years here, back to when I was doing wrestling. One of my best friends put underwear on his head and became the Underwear Taker. I love the wrestling Undertaker pun. So continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you with underwear.
On a moped down the ring, calling myself the Uncle Taker. I don't know what else. I would be thoroughly sports entertained right there. I think I understand what you're saying about the long run. It was in a dingy, dark room. I think that was to help set up the vibe of him because his colors were a little darker, but they're also flashy. So I think they wanted his colors to pop a little more in the light. But I think, like you said, when he comes out there, it might be like the first time that Adam Rose debuted in NXT and just how excited the crowd was for that to happen. I think, of course, we have to see what happens in the ring, but I don't watch Level Up. I pay attention through Tom's VIP podcast bonus point. So that's going to be the journey we take with him. But I think as far as character, as far as presentation, when he gets out there, I think he has it down. And I don't think that we have any concern with Quincy Elliott in terms of the charisma, in terms of the talent, in terms of the promo and those kind of talents. So I'm excited to see his debut whenever that does happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen him a couple times over, I don't know, the course of the year or so, doing some smaller things, whatever. And I've been on board. But now that you tell me about this Uncle Taker thing, man,
gotta go find the clip.
Like, yeah, actually, I kind of do. I definitely got to find that clip because that's some stupid humor that's right up my alley. So, did you have anything that you wanted to touch on with any of the other stuff? Wendy Chu. Actually, I guess really the only other thing we didn't touch on was Von Wagner and Mr. Stone, Solo Sikoa. And I think that's kind of almost self-explanatory. It was a pretty short vignette.
Yeah, Von Wagner is growing on the mic. That's good. Mr. Stone being there is definitely still a boon to him. I'm still disappointed that they kind of – it was right before Vince left too, but they basically just trashed the storyline that was brewing between Sophia Cromwell, Mr. Stone, and Von Wagner just so they could put her as Maximum Male Models, which was going to die with her as a gimmick until they brought back Max Dupree. So, yeah, good to see that after so long in NXT, we're finally starting to see some improvement in terms of character from Von Wagner. Stratton and Chu, I will just say that Tiffany Stratton is going to make a lot of money in this business.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely she is. Absolutely she is. And yeah, I am kind of curious to see what happens with Wendy Chu. I mean, I have not been secret about how much I don't like her current gimmick. I like her and as a wrestler, but I don't like the current gimmick. However, it kind of seems a little bit some darker shades. I mean, not like, you know, Undertaker or like Edge dark or anything like that. But
I mean, what color is her onesie now, Nate?
Well, wasn't it? Was it black tonight?
It was black. Of course it has to be black.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it has
Jade,
to be. Yep.
Just like her candles. Yep, exactly.
Yep. So I'm kind of curious to see how they wind up presenting, you know, a sleepy pajama wearing, like, you know, wrestler, a little bit darker and kind of where this goes. Maybe she turns kind of into almost like a supernatural nightmare character, you know, rather than dreams, nightmares. I don't know. I'm kind of just talking, and maybe I shouldn't be right now. But yeah, I don't know. What do you make of it? What do you think they're going to be doing with Wendy Chu? Are they going to kind of give her a little bit of a little bit of a makeover and give her a bit more of an edge, or are they going to kind of revert back to the goofy, weird, pillow loving, orange soda drinking Wendy Chu?
I think Triple H understands that that gimmick isn't going anywhere. So this could be a way to shift her to a more, even if they want to keep parts of the gimmick so it's not such a drastic change, a more serious sleepy character. I mean, she called herself tired, just tired of the whole situation. So she's not sleepy, she's tired, which is more a signal of just exhaustion more than just wanting to sleep. So maybe it's going to be a way in the lights out match for her to channel a sinister side, become Freddy Krueger or something, and really lay it into Tiffany Stratton. And again, this could be a way to do a double turn. I keep bringing that up, but there is a distinctive lack of faces in the women's roster. And Wendy Chu is not a face. She has not been a face for a while with how she's been acting and what she's been doing. So this could be a simple way to make the switch. And there's more. I think Tiffany Stratton definitely has her heel character down, but she's one of those where I think there's more money in her on the path towards the title than her as the heel. So she has a background that people can get into. She has a look that people can get into. She has the skill that keeps blossoming that will carry her, and definitely has a character down. So that could happen. And I just, you know, Wendy Chu, the wrestler, is definitely more talented than the gimmick she's been saddled with gives her credit for. So I'm hoping that next week becomes the first step in sort of the Wendy Chu reinvigoration project.
The Wendy Chu reinvigoration project. That sounds like something Aperture Laboratories would come up with.
Or some kind of community enhancement project.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. All right, guys, that is going to bring us to the end of our show. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for Heatwave here tonight. You can also check out my YouTube channel if you're into role-playing games and you're interested in finding out ways you can use them for some therapeutic benefits, therapeutic purposes. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I am one of the two NXT 2.0 live reporters. My report for Heatwave is up on the site right now. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
All right. And we will be back next week, hopefully with Kelly Wells, have the band back together. But until then, we'll see you later.